Information is free.
The law? Yeah.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care,
appear to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Art imitates life, imitates politics here on episode 101 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. Thank you for joining me on this Black Friday, Buy Nothing Day, November 28th, 2008. Coming to you as always from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. MediaMonarchy.com is your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Today, massive attacks, protesters clash, zombie stampedes and food shortages, worldwide surveillance threats and strategies, banksters, brothels, and end the Federal Reserve protests, and tons more. Episode 101. It's November 28th, Black Friday, 2008, and it's MediaMonarchy.com.
Thank you.
the average North American consumes five times more than a Mexican, 10 times more than a Chinese person, and 30 times more than a person from India. We are the most voracious consumers in the world. A world that could die because of the way we North Americans live. Give it a rest. November 23 is Buy Nothing Day.
But this time, November 28th is Buy Nothing Day. A little word from our friends at Adbusters. And of course, before that, Chinese democracy. Sorry to do that to you, but I'll explain in just a moment. But let me take care of the biz, my friends. And once again, let me welcome you to episode 101 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you live every Friday morning, as always, from downtown Portland, Oregon, where a parade is marching through town as I speak. It's Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, and Revere Radio Network, revereradio.net, Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time. And again, as always, thanks to the LPFM power of 93.9 KBFR in Boulder and 87.9 Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. And of course, you could and should hit me up on FaceSpace and YouTube and Yahoo and IM and Skype. iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org, of course, is where you can get the podcast anytime served out to you. Sometimes twice a week. And let me thank you, or implore you, to go check out last week's episode 100 with my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org and host of the Ground Zero Lounge live every Monday night here in Portland, Oregon at Dante's Inferno. I got a lot of great comments and compliments about the episode. People found it highly entertaining, and actually, yeah, Clyde and I both spoke about it afterwards. We had a great time. We seemed to kind of click and hit it off, and that was the first time he and I had ever met and talked. So it was nice to be able to finish each other's sentences and kind of be on the same page. So look for more from Clyde Lewis. I'll start bringing you more info from him and start posting up his latest episodes of Ground Zero Lounge, and we'll get to that as well in just a few minutes. It's one of those seat-of-my-pants episodes. Yes, I have much news, much wonderful, horrible things prepared for you, but I, of course, thankfully, spent yesterday with friends, hung out for a long, long time, and it was great to get away from the news and just hang out and joke and laugh and drink and sing and play guitar and have a good time and be thankful for those things. So before I jump to my prepared program for you, just a couple things in the news early this morning on this Black Friday. Dark, interesting things. Via Cryptogon.com by way of the New York Daily News, as well as all over the place, and I believe it's at the top of Google News right now. Walmart employee trampled to death. And as Cryptogon notes, maybe they need a zombie uprising category on their blog. Two deaths result from Walmart stampede. And again, this is New York Daily News. A worker died after being trampled and a woman miscarried when hundreds of shoppers smashed through the doors of a Long Island Walmart Friday morning, witnesses said. The unidentified worker employed as an overnight stock clerk. Damn, brother, that's one of my comrades there. Trampled by zombie shoppers. The unidentified worker employed as an overnight stock clerk. I don't work for Walmart, by the way, though. Tried to hold back the unruly crowds just after the Valley Stream store opened at 5 a.m. Witnesses said the surging throngs of shoppers knocked the man down. He fell and was stepped on. And as he gasped for air, shoppers ran over and around him. He was bum-rushed by 200 people, said Jimmy Overby, 43, a co-worker. They took the doors off the hinges. He was trampled and killed in front of me. They took me down, too. I literally had to fight people off my back. So Nassau
rather, county police are still investigating and would not confirm the witness accounts. The medical examiner will determine the cause of death. Police did say there were several injuries, but weren't more specific. Zombie stampede at a New York Walmart. The other one, if we jump to South Carolina, this by way of the Washington Times, and again, top of the news today on this Friday morning. Guns go tax-free for South Carolina shoppers. TVs and laptops won't be the only hot items in South Carolina this Black Friday. The state is offering an unusual perk to shoppers. No sales tax on handguns, rifles, and shotguns. The so-called Second Amendment weekend is thanks to a little debated amendment legislators tacked on this summer to a tax break for energy-efficient appliances. While the energy efficiency measure doesn't go into effect until next year, on Friday and Saturday, gun buyers won't have to pay state and local taxes that can total 8%. Taxes still apply to ammo and accessories. We're a gun-owning tradition state, a hunting tradition state, said Republican State Rep Mike Pitts, a retired police officer who introduced the proposal and has promoted other pro-gun legislation. Quite often, people will buy their pop or grandpop a shotgun or rifle to hunt with for Christmas, he said in an interview by cell phone while out hunting himself. So there you go, tax-free guns this weekend in South Carolina. Which now brings us back to something Clyde and I mentioned last week. And it's what is at the top of MediaMonarchy.com right now. And that is the Chinese democracy meme. And as I write, before we get into some of the news postings from all around, Wall Street Journal, The Australian, AP, you name it. The Chinese democracy meme, another fascinating intersection of art imitating life, imitating politics. So, with an incongruous title like Clockwork Orange, where the two words don't seem to fit together, kind of oxymoronic, I think the Chinese democracy meme begs the question, who's trying to force what on whom? So, even though the record is warmed over industrial rock way past its prime, it does plant the seed of predictive programming. We're not spreading democracy, we're all being imposed upon with the Chinese model of a new financial world order. China is the model. We've seen that, and we will see it coming more and more here to the North American Union. So from the Wall Street Journal, Guns N' Roses' new album is up against a Chinese wall. The heavy metal band Guns N' Roses is roiling China's music scene, but sex, drugs, and rock and roll aren't the issue. The trouble is the name of the group's latest album, Chinese Democracy. It's taken 17 years for the band to produce a new studio record now, even before it went on sale. In a release heralded by its producers as a historic moment in rock and roll, the disc is getting the thumbs down from Chinese authorities. It's also causing anxiety among GNR's legion of loyal fans there, who aren't sure they like what lead singer Axl Rose is trying to say about their country. China's government-owned music importing monopoly has signaled that local record distributors shouldn't bother ordering the record. Anything with democracy in the name is not going to work, said an official at the China National Publications Import and Export Group, part of the Ministry of Culture. So the other one from The Australian, a newspaper published by China's ruling Communist Party has blasted the latest Guns N' Roses album as an attack on the nation. China's internet censors appear to be trying to block fans from accessing websites related to the album, which is titled Chinese Democracy. Delayed since recording began in 1994, Chinese Democracy was released last Sunday here in the U.S. It's unlikely to be sold legally in China, where censors maintain tight control over films, music, and publications. In an article published on Monday headlined, American Band Releases Album Venomously Attacking China, the Global Times said Chinese internet users had described the album as part of a ploy by some in the West to, quote, grasp and control the world using democracy as a pawn. Also saying that the Guns N' Roses record, quote, turns its spear point on China. A couple of other interesting notes along with this. One of my favorite writers, Chuck Klosterman, writes about Chinese democracy over on the Onion's AV Club. an interesting one about Dr. Pepper to make good on Chinese democracy stunt. If you'd like to read more about that, that's over on Wired. And, of course, other articles just about the record coming out in general from Time and Wikinews. So, of course, being 31, I was basically 10 years old when Appetite for Destruction came out. And being a young, good Southern West Virginia Christian boy, it was the most fucking rocking and obscene thing I'd ever heard in my life. And to this day, I think Appetite for Destruction is fantastic, filthy, fast, loose, dirty, great rock and roll record. Thanks in no small part, I think, to coke-addled drummer Steven Adler. So, listening to the new record now, of course, you know, 15 plus years after I ever gave a shit about Guns N' Roses, I downloaded Chinese Democracy just out of some sort of morbid curiosity to see how it sounded. And of course, as I just read to you what I wrote, it's basically warmed over industrial rock way past its prime. So I think I've spent quite enough of time there on Guns N' Roses and Chinese Democracy. And as for playing the track, I'll make it up to you. But it's nice to be back in the studio here by myself. It's been about 3 weeks since I've done a solo show here at PRA. So as I relight my smoke, let's turn back to MediaMonarchy.com and hit the massive headline, Police State International, False Flags and the Strategy of Tension. The first one is an important one, and I haven't been able to dig super deeply into this one yet. Again, so much news washing over me, and again, just trying to also live your life and have some fun. However, much investigation is needed into this story. German intelligence agents caught staging false flag terror. This from Paul Joseph Watson. German intelligence agencies have been caught staging a false flag terror attack against an EU building in Kosovo, apparently in an attempt to create a pretext for EU police to be deployed in Kosovo after government leaders rejected the UN-mandated proposal. Quote, Germany declined to comment on Saturday on reports that three Germans arrested on suspicion of throwing explosives at an EU office in Kosovo were intelligence officers. That's from Reuters. The explosive charge was thrown on November 14th at the International Civilian Office, ICO, the office of EU Special Representative Pieter Feith, who oversees Kosovo's governance. So, a police source in Kosovo told Reuters they are members of the BND. But, of course, he gave no further details. But German news outlet Der Spiegel named the men as BND intelligence officers. BND, basically Germany's intelligence. Their black op group. Most reports claim that the officers had thrown dynamite at the building, while others reported that a bomb was placed near the building. And so there's a link to EuropeanVoice.com as well as WireDispatch.com for more on German intelligence agents caught staging false flag terror. A few headlines, but we're not going to dig into the posts. However, I always recommend a visit to DailyDoseOfTerror.blogspot.com. Some of his latest posts go over disturbing things such as this, a DOD pandemic simulation, the latest on JFCOM, and of course, all the latest on the terror drills. Another one is World Depression, U.S. Collapse, plus some India-China war games. Chilton expects new attacks, and Microsoft to aid the war on terror. Those are just a few of the latest headlines from Daily Dose of Terror. However, now let's turn back to the homeland of Cleveland, Ohio. Yes. This is from WKYC. Cleveland installs downtown surveillance cameras.
Big Brother will be watching you around Cleveland.
The city has placed 13 cameras around downtown. The purpose of this is to discourage crime. They put them in places like the tops of buildings and on four corners of Public Square and near the Justice Center. Each has a blue flashing light, and they are always recording.
No one likes to be spied upon, you know, but sometimes things that need to be seen that might cause harm to people are noticed and prevented with the cameras. So there's pro and con.
The city's safety director, Martin Flask, tells Channel 3 that more of these cameras are on the way.
Of course they are. So that's Cleveland installing downtown surveillance cameras. Now let's jump to Arizona Republic. License plate scanning, catching crooks, and raising privacy worries. Officer David Callister parks his patrol car under a shady interstate overpass, angling his cameras to target a flurry of passing traffic. Then he waits. Infrared units mounted to the front of Callister's vehicle scan the license plates of a Casa Grande firefighter, an Ohio State football fan, and everyone else who drives past as he hunts for stolen vehicles. Every plate is photographed, time-stamped, labeled on a GPS map, and automatically logged into an Arizona Department of Public Safety database. An electronic voice alerts Callister to stolen vehicles within seconds after they pass, giving him the ability to make quick arrests. Every plate is photographed, time-stamped, labeled on a GPS map, and automatically logged into an Arizona Department of Public Safety database. The database. Another one from the register.co.uk. U.S. rolls out Vicinity RFID. Of course, to check IDs in moving vehicles. RFID technology that allows the remote identification of travelers in moving vehicles is being rolled out at U.S. land border crossings this month. Crossing points with Canada at Blaine and with Mexico at Nogales came online last week, with Buffalo, Detroit, and San Ysidro to follow, and a total of 39 planned. The system uses the U.S. Passport People Access Security Service card. That's a new type of card, and we can hit the link to Wikipedia to read more about that, and we can also, of course, just go to the State Department's website and read about it. So the system uses U.S. Passport People Access Security Service card, which is intended to operate within the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative. And you can read about that. Oh, we're being sectioned off, my friends. 10 sectors of the North American Union coming soon. Using Vicinity RFID, it can read the cards from a healthy skimming distance of 20 to 30 feet, but according to the Department of Homeland Stupidity, this ain't a problem. The RFID chip on the card doesn't contain any personal info, only a unique identification number, and skimmers wouldn't have access to the data the number matches up with. So again, just like they say, oh, well, your fingerprint isn't really your fingerprint, it's just zeros and ones. It's all fucking zeros and ones, so when they say it doesn't track you, that's bullshit. Well, it doesn't know that you're James Evan Pilato, it just knows that you're number 8675931. But when you put in 8675931, it says James Evan Pilato. Or John Doe. Or David Nelson. Or God knows what. But I didn't call this Police State International for nothing. It's not just in the U.S. Of course, the U.K. are masters of CCTV. This is a disturbing one from the Telegraph. UK social services set up CCTV camera in couple's bedroom. Council staff are said to have spied on the young parents at night as part of a plan to see if they were fit to look after their baby, who is sleeping in another room. The mother and father were forced to cite the Human Rights Act, which protects the right to a private life, before the social services team backed down and agreed to switch off the surveillance camera while they were in bed together. The case is highlighted in a new dossier of human rights abuses carried out against vulnerable and elderly adults in nursing homes and hospitals across Britain. It comes just days after the government admitted town halls have gone too far in using anti-terror laws to snoop on members of the public. Google Patriot Act used in non-terror related cases. They start with something reasonable sounding. Oh, we want to catch stolen cars. Oh, we need to track HIV patients. Oh, your dog, your cat ran away. And it goes downhill, a slippery slope. The person who got my vote in the 2008 presidential selection was recently prevented from leaving the United States. Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman and presidential candidate, has been prevented from leaving the country after she planned to give a speech in Damascus, Syria, at a conference being held to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is a sketchy document in and of itself. But let's not get into that right now. So from Cynthia McKinney herself, today being November 23rd when she wrote this, she was slated to give remarks in Damascus, Syria at a conference being held to commemorate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and sadly the 60th year that the Palestinian people have been denied their right of return enshrined in that Universal Declaration. But a funny thing happened to me while at the Atlanta airport on my way to the conference. I was not allowed to exit the country. And so you can hit that link and read more again from Paul Joseph Watson and ask the question, why was Cynthia McKinney prevented from leaving the United States? Is it because of all those uncomfortable questions she asks? Like about the U.S. government doing business with DynCorp and Halliburton repeatedly, even though we know they're involved in kidnapping and slavery? She asked about the drills on 9/11, and she's asked about the trillions missing from the Pentagon, and she's been nothing but a friend to 9/11 truth. So we'll see what spills out about Cynthia McKinney being prevented from leaving the United States. And we can see that they're setting it up. It's all coming together. So many things. And again, Clyde would call it the revelation of the method, as others would. It has to become fairly apparent now. It's not conspiracy theory. It's being talked about. But it's being shaded and smoked and mirrored. The Associated Press. Military examines role in domestic defense. Does this sound familiar? Has this been something we've been talking about lately? Do we need new domestic intelligence agency? We, of course, had the RAND report we covered recently. But here, surprise, surprise, Defense Secretary Robert Gates on Monday ordered his top department leaders to conduct a broad review to determine whether the military, National Guard, and Reserve can adequately deal with the domestic disasters and whether they have the training and equipment to defend the homeland. The 41-page memo signaled an acknowledgement that the military must better recognize the critical role of the National Guard and Reserves in homeland defense, but stop short of requiring many specific policy changes. His memo, of course, comes in the wake of a stinging 400-page independent commission report that concluded the military isn't ready for a catastrophic attack on the country and that National Guard forces don't have the equipment or training they need for the job. So, of course, let's have a false flag terror attack and then they can get all the training and power they desire. I don't believe I've posted it up yet, but of course we've now confirmed that, you're going to get some fucking change, bitch. Yes, we can keep Robert Gates on as Defense Secretary. Yes, we can continue the criminal war on terror. Yes, we can set up a civilian national security force. A press release from our own U.S. Army, it's not really ours, it's been taken over by the international globalist military industrial complex. However, a press release from the United States Army talks about how they're going to equip the National Guard units with future combat system aerial robots. So there we go. National Guard forces don't have the equipment or training they need for the job, we just heard in the previous article, Military Examines Role in Domestic Defense. Here you go. Army's going to give National Guard units future combat system robots. And we've covered over the past 2 years on Media Monarchy future combat systems. The Army's commitment to equipping its total force with future combat system FCS capabilities continues as the 1st Army National Guard Unit, the 56th Stryker Brigade Combat Team of the Pennsylvania National Guard begins training next month with the FCS-developed gasoline-powered micro-air vehicle, GMAV. And this, of course, is prior to the unit's deployment to Iraq in January. Robots. Piloted by video game loving 20-year-olds. Killing other 20-year-old brown people who didn't do a fucking thing to us on 9/11. If we move now to the French agency press, the AFP, U.S. government taps Facebook, Google, and MTV to fight terrorism. The U.S. State Department announced plans on Monday to promote online youth groups as a new and powerful way to fight crime, political oppression, and terrorism. Drawing inspiration from a movement against FARC rebels in Colombia, the State Department is joining forces with Facebook, Google, MTV, Howcast, and others in New York City next week to get the, quote, ball rolling. It said 17 groups from South Africa, Britain, and the Middle East, which have an online presence like the Million Voices Against the FARC, will attend a conference at Columbia University Law School from December 3rd through the 5th. Columbia University. Where's Big New Brzezinski took a young man named Barack Hussein Obama under his wing and has been cranking his key for the last 20 years. And now the Manchurian candidate is marching forth. It's fascism. Again, people throw that word around. Again, I've mentioned a guy at work, older guy. Old vet, anti-war guy, smart dude. He thinks Brzezinski's pragmatic. He likes him. But thinks that McCain, he's a fascist. But again, my man, I don't think you understand the word fascism. We're seeing it. And we're imposing it on ourselves. And again, it's coming all in your face right here. U.S. government taps Facebook, Google, and MTV to fight terrorism. Get ready for Obama's Green Brigades. The little nanny state green police snitch squads. Brown shirts. But I digress. Let's get the last two stories under this police state international heading. This from the International Herald Tribune. Robot may be more humane soldier. In the heat of battle, their minds clouded by fear, anger, or vengefulness, even the best trained soldiers can act in ways that violate the Geneva Conventions or battlefield rules of engagement. Now, some researchers suggest that robots could do better. My research hypothesis is that intelligent robots can behave more ethically in the battlefield than humans currently can, said Ronald Arkin, a computer scientist at Georgia Tech, who's designing software for battlefield robots under contract with the U.S. Army. That's the case I make, he says. But who controls those robots? Super Soldiers and Beyond is a story from Discover Magazine on one of their blogs, the military's most far-seeing agency. We could say much more about them. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, required the services of 11th Hour's Jacob Hood in an episode, TV show, 11th Hour, to figure out who violently killed some test chimps and a veterinarian at the agency's Super Soldier program. It seems a mad scientist had found some way to increase the size of a human amygdala, which led the soldier to have extreme and unthinking fight-or-flight reactions. Whenever someone approached this super soldier in a threatening way, he reacted with extreme prejudice. Naturally, the mad scientist wasn't supposed to be testing on people, which is why by the end of the show, he was off to prison. But DARPA is pretty serious about improving the human component of soldiering. After decades of focusing on machines like unmanned flying drones, GPS, and internet, does all that sound a little familiar? DARPA decided toward the end of the 90s to focus on improving the actual biology of soldiers. Contrary to the show, 11th Hour, the goal is not extremely obedient killers. Oh, of course not. The modern military is focused on small teams functioning independently, far from base and reinforcements of any kind. To succeed in this kind of environment, they want to actually increase the ability of soldiers to think creatively, to stay awake longer, and to be physically active longer without becoming tired. So that's the report from the Register, or rather, no, sorry, from Discover Magazine, Super Soldiers and Beyond. A last bit of headlines under Police State International. Bush administration dismissed the RFID Mark of the Beast lawsuit. You can read about that on Threat Level. There was a real estate seminar telling you to become a New World Order agent. That's from InfoWars, and it basically shows this ad campaign from a real estate firm that had this signage and design about how to be a New World Order agent. They kind of look like Neo and Matrix and, again, New World Order in your face. Fox News' Roger Ailes says, quote, "I defend the U.S., Israel, and the Constitution," end quote. Let's just, I guess, hope they're in that order. That's from thinkprogress.org. Italian police officers convicted of violence at 2001 G8 Genoa summit. That's from blacklistednews.com. Security focused on protesters more than terror. That's from the San Francisco Guardian. KBR's convenient contract, this comes from legitgov.org, Citizens for Legitimate Government. I believe we pointed out how KBR got a great contract recently. And oh, shucky darns, it sure worked out well when California burnt down 2 days later. And KBR had just scooped up the contracts. FOIA documents show feds can lowjack mobile phones without telecom companies' help. That's from ArsTechnica.com. DHS and DOJ, Homeland Stupidity and the Department of Injustice, they're giving more info to local officers, NationalLedger.com. Anti-war vets deploy 4,171 toy soldiers at a gas station protest. That's from Raw Story, and there's a good video along with that one. Worried about your job? Become a war profiteer. That's from kickboeingtothecurb.com. Doomsday budget plans call for cuts to New York subway service. That's from Cryptogon. Autopsy says man tased by deputies died naturally. That's from WITN.com. And of course, maybe he just died of that new syndrome of how people die from being tased. The head of Interpol Mexico arrested for drug ties. That's from alertnet.org. And it's an interesting sidebar note for you. Art imitating life, imitating politics. Recently watched the fourth season of Weeds from Showtime. And in that, our hero, Nancy, has hooked up with the mayor of Tijuana. However, he just happens to run the tunnels where they run drugs and guns and white slaves through. So I watch that and then the next day see that, oh, well, the head of the Interpol in Mexico City has been arrested for running drugs. Hank Paulson, of course, was behind the martial law bailout threat. That's from InfoWars.com. Tough training brings tears to agents' eyes. That's from Pro8News.com. Of course, testing less than lethal weapons on agents. So you can watch feds get sprayed and chemicals sprayed on them. And again, you'll know what's in store for us should we decide, you know, to get a little unruly when TV ain't working and ATM machine ain't spitting out no money. And the last one on this, as I spit my bitter venom, again from Threat Level on Wire.com, experimental shoe print database sees the souls of criminals. S-O-L-E-S, souls. Get the pun? And that's the massive posting, Police State International, false flags and the strategy of tension. As I mentioned a little bit ago, I'm going to start posting up Clyde Lewis's Ground Zero Lounge episodes, recorded live at Dante's Inferno every Monday night here in Portland, Oregon. He was on last week's episode 100. You should check that out, please. His latest episode from the Ground Zero Lounge is called Bloating in the Deadpool. And so, as Clyde writes, it didn't take long for Barack Obama to rattle the bones of an old ghost. Taken right from the script came the announcement that he will hunt down Osama bin Laden. But OBL's dead. And in this episode, Clyde Lewis expresses his displeasure in hearing that Obama says that he's fighting a phantom menace. This is not change. Let's move now to what is obviously the biggest story of the week. Coordinated carnage in Mumbai, India. And as of this recording right now, as I come to you Friday morning, I believe there are 145 people confirmed dead. But let's set the table with the initial report that I saw when it was breaking news yesterday. This from Danger Room. Something horrible is happening in Mumbai. And that's Mumbai. And again, at this point, initially, 80 people were dead and 250 injured in a coordinated series of attacks on luxury hotels, train stations, and tourist attractions in India's financial capital. At least 7 sites were struck, the Times of India reports, and the death toll could easily climb much higher. 60 lifeless bodies and over 200 injured people were brought to a single hospital, according to DNA Mumbai. A little-known group, the Deccan Mujahideen, has claimed responsibility, the AP reports. That's Deccan Mujahideen, Decca Mujahideen. The strikes come after a series of blasts attributed to Islamist terrorists over the summer and autumn in other cities around India, the Wall Street Journal notes. Terrorists, armed with AK-47 rifles and grenades, stormed the passenger hall of Mumbai's CST train station. They opened fire and threw grenades, according to Mumbai General Railway Police Commissioner. 30 people were injured there. Firing was also reported at the Kama Hospital in South Mumbai, police said, adding that a blast was reported in a taxi under a flyover in suburban Ville Parle. Three persons were killed in a bomb explosion in a taxi on Mazagon Dockyard Road, and an equal number were gunned down at the Taj Hotel. Bellboys could be seen rushing the injured out on luggage trolleys, again according to the DNA Mumbai. The victims included 3 senior police officers, including the head of the state's anti-terror squad. More bloodshed would come from the Taj attack. The gun-toting terrorists who hit the landmark hotel also took 15 people, half of them foreigners, hostage on the roof of the luxury Taj Hotel. An escaped hostage tells the Times of India. And the attackers, men in their early 20s, honed in on, quote, anyone with British or American passports, an eyewitness said. Survivors of the attack on the Oberoi Hotel told a similar story. A British restaurant goer tells Sky News Television, quote, the attackers were singling out Britons and Americans. So, this is interesting. That's the party line from Danger Room in the Wall Street Journal and some of the other mainline AP-type sources. So let's listen to a clip that will kind of run down the early timeline, and then we'll start to break down this latest massive attack.
24 hours on, we are still grappling, attempting to piece together all that has transpired over the last 25 hours, as we are saying. Here's what we know of what took place in the 3 focal points, the Oberoi, the Taj Hotel, as well as the Nariman House.
Visuals that will haunt Mumbai, perhaps forever. Mumbai's landmark, the heritage Taj Mahal Hotel, in flames. At 9:30 p.m. on Wednesday night, terrorists enter the 22-story hotel, taking people hostage. Mumbai's anti-terrorist squad lays siege to the hotel. Explosions are heard, sounds of gunfire. At 2 a.m., 6 more explosions are heard from inside the hotel. A fire breaks out in the central dome of the hotel. At 5 a.m., 3 terrorists are killed in a gun battle. Some guests are evacuated, but the war is far from over. 24 hours later, it still continues.
Within minutes of first gunfire, panic had struck completely in the entire southern Mumbai.
Young, unidentified and heavily armed men were suddenly popping across various locations in the city. From the CSE railway station to five-star hotels to the very popular Leopold Cafe in Colaba. Eyewitness accounts collated by the intelligence agency's report suggest that these men made their way into the heart of the city through the route of C.
The terrorists break into smaller groups. They walk towards the Taj, Oberoi and the Leopold Cafe and open indiscriminate fire. At 9:45 p.m., another group heads to the CST station, platform number 7, and the reservation area. They start firing indiscriminately with AK-47s, Sten guns and hand grenades. By 10:30 p.m., some terrorists from the group attacking the CST station move on towards the adjacent BNP headquarters. By 10:40 p.m., the terrorists move towards the Karma Hospital and open fire. ATS Police Chief Inspector General Hemant Karkare, along with additional CP Ashok Kamte and Senior Police Inspector Vijay Salaskar, a crack encounter specialist of the Mumbai Police, follow the trail of the terrorists to the Karma Hospital. They enter the hospital in a police police. They get off and walk into the hospital and unexpectedly come face to face with heavily armed terrorists who open fire, killing all the three police officers on the spot. The terrorists then take over the Qualys police car and drive out of the Karma Hospital, heading towards the Metro Junction. That's when CNN and IBN video journalists capture these dramatic visuals of terrorists opening fire on media crews and people gathered at the Metro Junction, killing one person and injuring two. The terrorists speed off towards the Oberoi, abandon the car behind the hotel and take over a scooter. They are gunned down by a police team at Chowpatty. By daybreak, the focus of attention shifts to the three locations where terrorists reportedly take hostages, Taj and the Oberoi Hotel and the Nariman House. The central government constitutes emergency meetings. In Mumbai, the state government too goes into a crisis management mode. Bureau Report, CNN IBN.
Let's break down some of the propaganda behind this coordinated carnage and massive attack in Mumbai, India, with the first from a few updates from Paul Joseph Watson, because, of course, this whole story stinks, basically. Update number one, Mumbai attacks to be blamed on Pakistan. Coordinated attacks across Mumbai, India's financial capital, are likely to be blamed on a terrorist organization linked to the Pakistani ISI, providing further justification for controversial U.S. bombings inside Pakistani territory and heightened rhetoric against Pakistan on behalf of President-elect Obama. Journalist Stephen Schwartz notes that several terrorist and criminal groups are, quote, backed by senior officers in the Pakistani army and the country's ISI intelligence establishment and other armed bodies of the state. Author Daniel Byman states, quote, Pakistan is probably today's most active sponsor of terrorism. Indeed, Indian police claimed that the Pakistani ISI directed the July 2006 train bombing in Mumbai, which killed 186 people, which was blamed on the Islamist militant group Lashkar-e-Toiba, an organization based in Pakistan. Look for the same organization or an affiliated group to be blamed for what, at the time of this writing, was today's attacks, now yesterday. And we'll get to some of the more interesting updates. Oh, I wonder what Pakistan is going to have to do with this. As Bloomberg reports, the government has previously blamed terrorist attacks on organizations linked to foreign powers without offering evidence or making arrests. Local media often blame the attacks on groups backed by Pakistan or Bangladesh without identifying the security officials who provided the information. With shill corporate media outfits begging for a scapegoat to be used as war on terror propaganda, it won't be long before an Al-Qaeda Pakistan link is claimed. Indeed, early reports already state that the attacks are, quote, thought to be linked to Al-Qaeda, offering no evidence, and in spite of the fact that an unknown group, Deccan Mujahideen, has claimed responsibility for the massacre. The Deccan Plateau is a large plateau in India, suggesting this is where the terrorist group was based. So you can hit the links to the Telegraph. In Bloomberg and see that it's, quote, thought to be linked to Al-Qaeda. However, update two, International Herald Tribune, experts doubt Al-Qaeda link in Mumbai attacks. Global terrorism experts said Thursday that they had never heard of the group, Deccan Mujahideen, and based on its tactics, they said it was probably not a cell or a group linked to Al-Qaeda. It could be a cover name for another group or a name adopted just for this particular incident. Christine Fair, senior political scientist and a South Asia expert at the RAND Corporation, was careful to say that the identity of the terrorists could not yet be known, but she insisted the style of the attacks and the targets in Mumbai suggested that the militants were likely to be Indian Muslims and not linked to Al-Qaeda or the violent South Asian terrorist group Lashkar-e-Taiba. Spelled differently than what I read for you before, but you get the idea. Quote, "There's absolutely nothing Al-Qaeda-like about it," she said of the attack. "Did you see any suicide bombers? Are there no fingerprints of Lashkar? They don't do hostage-taking, and they don't do grenades." Hoffman, another writer quoted in this IHT report, agreed that the assault was, quote, "not exactly Al-Qaeda's modus operandi, which is suicide attacks." Update number 3. Again, from Paul Joseph Watson, attacks blamed on Al-Qaeda as pretext for response. The majority of the corporate media has gleefully seized upon the terror attacks in Mumbai to claim that they are the work of Al-Qaeda, despite clear and contradictory evidence suggesting otherwise. Of course, as a pretext to increase bombing campaigns in Pakistan and beef up support for the ailing war on terror in Afghanistan. Change. The swiftness with which the media blamed Al-Qaeda was staggering, especially considering the fact that the attacks had not even concluded before the boogeyman was whipped out of the closet once more to act as a poster child for the war on terror and allow the TV networks to show lots of blood, panic, and authority figures pointing guns at people. The only claim of responsibility for the attacks came from the quote-unquote Deccan Mujahideen. But of course, the press, usually breathless to take the first obscure claim of culpability and set it in stone, are now belittling this explanation as a likely hoax in an attempt to blame, or rather pin the blame, on the almighty mythical Al-Qaeda. Earlier eyewitness reports from the hotel suggest the attackers were singling out British and American passport holders, reports the BBC. If the reports are true, our security correspondent Frank Gardner says it implies an Islamist motive, attacks inspired or coordinated by Al-Qaeda. Really? Well, perhaps the BBC's security correspondent should be worried about his job security because the facts directly contradict previously alleged Al-Qaeda attacks. Again, since when do Al-Qaeda take hostages? Since when do they hang around to be caught? Since when do Al-Qaeda use grenades rather than bombs or suicide bombs? And if the attacks were targeted against British and American citizens, then tell me why, out of at least 145 people killed, were there only, as of now, 2 Americans killed? So we'll hit the report from the Washington Post. A father and daughter from Virginia were among the 145 people killed. I'm not making light of that. I'm just saying if that's who they were singling out, it didn't go so well. Update number 4. Again, Paul Joseph Watson, staying on top of this story. This is from this morning, November 28th. Media forced to backtrack on Al-Qaeda link to Mumbai attacks. After brazenly declaring that the Mumbai attacks were the work of Al-Qaeda, the corporate media has been forced to backtrack, while India continues to blame Pakistan in a dangerous escalation of rhetoric between the two nuclear-armed powers. Bellicose propaganda about bin Laden being behind the massacre, which was initially propagated by the BBC, the London Times, and Fox News, amongst others, has largely evaporated, with the majority of the establishment press being forced to admit they have no idea who's behind the siege on India's financial capital. But now, let's look at Google News right now and see that the head of the Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence, ISI, is on his way to India. India forces Pakistan to send the ISI chief over. Red Rover, Red Rover. Send the chief right over. This is from Press Trust of India. Angered by the Mumbai terror strikes, India today forced Pakistan to send its ISI chief here to provide evidence about the role of Pakistan-based elements in the outrageous attacks, as it made clear that the bilateral ties would be hurt if these don't stop. So I'm sure we're going to see more and more spill out about the massive attacks in Mumbai, India. Interestingly enough, the way this played out, my friends, on Thanksgiving for you, or perhaps the day before, the night before, rather. Feds warn of terror plotting against New York City subways. Plausible but unsubstantiated threataganda against the New York City subway just in time for the holidays.
A warning from federal authorities about a possible terror plot against the New York City subway system during the holiday season. An internal memo obtained by the Associated Press says the FBI received what it calls plausible but unsubstantiated reports that Al-Qaeda terrorists in late September may have discussed attacking the system. Anti-terror agencies say they have no details to confirm that the plot moved beyond aspirational planning, but are issuing the alert, concerned an attack could come during the holidays. Lee Powell, The Associated Press.
Tonight, a new terror threat against New York with far-reaching consequences.
Officials are warning about an Al-Qaeda plot to blow up trains with suicide bombers. Now, the city has beefed up security around the transit hubs, flooding Penn Station with police officers, including Amtrak guards equipped with M16s. CBS2's Marcia Kramer has more.
It's a little nerve-wracking, and, you know, it makes you think twice about how you're going to travel and get around.
I'm not going to stress it. They're going to get you. They're going
to
get you.
Yet another holiday threat from Al-Qaeda to attack the city's transit system. But officials in the know say the threat is serious and significant.
We know who carried out the conversation. We know where it was held. We know details of type of attack they're talking about.
An FBI report says, quote, these discussions reportedly involved the use of suicide bombers or explosives placed on subway passenger rail systems. Sources tell CBS2 the plot involved the Long Island Railroad. So if the explosion went off in Penn Station, the source said, it would affect transportation on Amtrak's northeast corridor between Boston and Washington, LIRR service, and the New York City subway system.
We know it was discussed by people who are connected to Al-Qaeda, and we know that the details, which make it seem very plausible, but there's no evidence at all that any action has been taken to carry it out.
Mayor Bloomberg was asked tonight about the terrorist threat.
We take every single threat seriously, but there does not seem to be anything. I took the subway this morning. I'm going to take the subway tomorrow.
Riders can expect heightened law enforcement presence all across the system. That means cops, federal agents, canine squads, even inspectors. At Penn Station, I'm Marcia Kramer, CBS 2 News.
A federal law enforcement official said that there is no indication that anyone involved in the planning is in the United States.
Plausible but unsubstantiated. More threataganda with nothing to back it up. Keeping you on your toes, keeping you looking under your bed for Al-Qaeda for the holidays. But let's put that into perspective a little bit and return to dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. A man, Greg Nixon, says it all. DC criminals distract with Al-Qaeda scam while they loot the treasury. And he notes an article from WCBS-TV where the first sentence says it all. The world's economic fears were violently pushed aside on Wednesday by another global threat, terrorism. A massive coordinated attack was launched in Mumbai, India, just hours after the FBI warned that Al-Qaeda may be targeting New York's subways and railroads. So again, the first sentence says it all. All the world's economic fears pushed aside. And again, as Greg Nixon notes, the criminals in D.C. want to distract the masses while they steal their money. It's like being mugged on the subway by a team of professional thieves who get your attention while one of the gang gets your wallet. Does anyone believe in the terror scam anymore? We need to arrest the U.S. government now more than ever. Put simply by Greg Nixon at dailydoseofterror.blogspot.com. I said I'd make it up to you and get that Guns N' Roses taste out of our mouth and play something very different from an old favorite band of mine called Pulp. The song goes back to their 1995 classic record, Different Class, and it's a different song, but a similar sentiment. It's Misshapes.
Misshapes, mistakes, misfits, raised on a diet of broken biscuits. Oh, we don't look the same as you. And we don't do the things you do. But we live around here too, oh really. Misshapes, mistakes, misfits, We'd like to go to town, but we can't risk it all. Cause they just wanna keep us out. You could end up with a smack in the mouth just for standing out now, really. Brothers, sisters, can't you see? The future's owned by you and me. There won't be a fighting in the streets. They think they've got us beat, but revenge is gonna be so sweet. We're making a move, we're making it now. We're coming out on the sidelines. Just put your hands up, it's the rage, yeah. We want your homes, we want your lives. We want the things you want.
We want your homes, we want your lives, we want the things you won't allow us. We won't use guns, we won't use bombs, we'll use the one thing we've got more of, and that's our minds. That's Pulp going back 13 years to their record Different Class for the song Misshapes, that I think somehow expresses a similar sentiment as the first song we heard at the top of the show, Chinese Democracy from Guns N' Roses, where it says, it would take a lot more hate than you to end the fascination, and even with an iron fist, all they've got to rule the nation when all I've got is precious time. They both seem to be talking about the us versus them, but who's the us and who's the them? Or perhaps, as Clyde Lewis or Alex Ansari would say, it's not about red state versus blue state, it's about the state versus you. We're now into hour number two of episode 101 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. More news, more threataganda, and more build-up for the amazing inaugural event of the Manchurian candidate Barack H. Obama. I believe there's a funny headline that I've bookmarked. It's going to go up in my latest posting of the Obama-Saya. But it was a funny headline. The White House says that Obama may scale back inaugural balls. He has got some huge inaugural balls. But this ties into the inaugural event. And of course, as we noted on the B-side last night, that a million dupes are going to head to D.C. Hotels overbooked, even in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, as we brace for what kind of event they're preparing. Or what kind of event, you know, like Biden or Powell or Albright talk about, a generated crisis, an event. Or like the head of the CFR says, they'll be tested, there'll be coups, there'll be genocide, there'll be terrorism. This from CBS News. Nuke hunters go undercover in large crowds. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr takes an inside look at a top secret team sponsored by the U.S. government, which is sent out to block nuclear threats against the United States.
About another 20 seconds.
From the skies over Washington, a super secret government team is training for the ultimate terrorist threat.
The closer we are to the ground, the closer we are to the radiation, the better we can see it.
For security, we cannot show you their faces or identify these secret nuke hunters. CBS News rode along for an exclusive look at this drill aimed at finding stolen radioactive cesium, a potential ingredient for a dirty bomb.
I got elevated counts, Mark.
A spike on a radiation monitor signals the chopper is zeroing in on a radioactive source.
So that tells you this is not normal. This is something that should not be. What that says to me is that I have a radioactive isotope emitting energy. This is more than likely where the source is.
But in big cities like Washington, where millions of people will gather for January's presidential inauguration, nukes and dirty bombs, explosives laced with radioactive materials, could be difficult to detect. Naturally occurring radiation is everywhere, given off by the granite from U.S. government buildings and the tombstones at Arlington National Cemetery. Even heavily fertilized suburban golf courses emit radiation.
In a city, why is it important to understand where the natural radiation is?
Well, it's important to establish a baseline of what radiation is there already. So in case that there is an incident, we won't be led astray by anomalies.
So far, the team has made radiation maps of the nation's top two terror targets, Washington and New York City. Chicago is next.
We just got an alarm?
Not all of the work is done from the air. Here, a ground team trains with an alert from a parked car.
System is analyzing the data. Radium 226.
These mobile nuke detectors from the National Nuclear Security Administration, or NNSA, are a key part of security at big events like the Super Bowl and the upcoming inauguration, where undercover teams will be moving among the crowds, quietly snooping for radiation.
We'll have people walking around with various detectors and devices. They'll come up to people. They'll look for anything unusual.
Skeptics downplay the risk of terrorist nukes, but the consequences of a terrorist nuclear attack are unthinkable. So these nuke hunters can't afford to stop looking for the nuclear threat. Bob for CBS News, Washington.
Prepping you for a dirty bomb suitcase nuke bio release. So as they keep that fear going, there's another more omnipresent, tangible fear growing worldwide. This from The Scotsman. A near riot and parliament besieged. Iceland is boiling mad at the credit crunch, and that's a nice way to put it. Thousands of Icelanders have demonstrated in Reykjavik to demand the resignation of Prime Minister Geir Hard and Central Bank Governor David Oddsson for failing to stop the country's financial meltdown. It's the latest in a series of protests in the capital since October's banking collapse crippled the island's economy. At least five people were injured, and Hordur Torfason, a well-known singer in Iceland and the main organizer of the protest, said the protest would continue until the government stepped down. As crowds gathered in the drizzle before the Althing, the Iceland parliament, with a link for you to read more about that, Mr. Torfason said, "They don't have our trust and they are no longer legitimate." The value of the Icelandic krona has been cut in half since January. That's K-R-O-N-A, the Icelandic krona. Iceland was the first country to ask the IMF for help as the turmoil in the credit markets in October hit home. And if we jump to the bottom of the article, an interesting thing jumps out. The UK government used anti-terrorism legislation to freeze money deposited by UK savers in Icelandic banks in order to ensure that their money was protected. I told you earlier to Google Patriot Act used in non-terror related cases. I'm sure we could just alter that now, change the terms, change the agencies, move it to the UK, and see how they also use quote-unquote anti-terror legislation to do whatever they want. Freeze a bank account, and the rest falls away. We do have updates in the breakdown in Iceland. A note from Kurt Nemo: Icelanders attack police station as bankster plan unfolds. In October, the CBC reported on the exceedingly polite protest in Iceland as the bankers looted the country. A placard at a demonstration outside Iceland's parliament in Reykjavik stated, "Stay calm while we rob you." CBC asked the question, how long will these people stay polite about their losses? Well, let's move from October to last weekend and hear how Iceland is not staying polite.
Hundreds gathered for peaceful protests in Iceland, protests which ended with a police charge and pepper spray. Around 7,000 people gathered in downtown Reykjavik yesterday, a familiar scene since the country's recent banking crisis plunged the small nation into economic chaos. Several people gave heated speeches, their main demands that the government and chairman of the banks resign and that elections be called as soon as possible. At the end of the meeting, the organizers reminded all present that one of their own had been arrested the previous day in what they claimed was unconstitutional police action. Several hundred protesters then made their way toward police headquarters, where demonstrations continued, eventually escalated into a small riot when police refused to release the jailed protester. Rioters threw rocks and broke windows and used makeshift battering rams to break down the doors of the police headquarters, with police barricaded inside, still holding the arrested protester. Standoff ensued, which only ended when an anonymous benefactor paid the protesters' outstanding fine for disorderly conduct. He emerged to a jubilant crowd. A police spokesman said several people were injured and taken to hospital.
Anger has boiled over in Iceland. Dozens of people tried to free a man arrested for flying a supermarket flag over Parliament. They threw eggs and broke windows until police forced them away with pepper spray and batons. The man they were trying to free was eventually released after someone paid his fine. The demonstration had begun with several thousand people demanding the government resign. There's widespread anger at Prime Minister for failing to stop the country's financial meltdown. One protester climbed onto the balcony of Parliament with a placard, "Iceland for sale, $2.1 billion, the amount the International Monetary Fund lent the central bank this week. Other countries have lent more. Iceland has now borrowed $10 billion. That's $30,000 for each of its inhabitants. The IMF has also imposed stringent conditions. No election is due in Iceland for over 2 years, but these protesters want one straight away to punish those they believe are responsible for the mess." Phil Hayton, BBC News.
The bankster plan unveiled worldwide. It's a new financial world order. And I think it's been correctly pointed out that the terror scam doesn't work unless they pull off the big events for us like we see in Mumbai. But like I said, the more palpable threats seem to come in the form of lack of food. And I believe the only previous time that I mentioned the crisis in Iceland was mentioning their grocery stores being emptied. So let's keep looking through that lens, but shift the view back to the United States. The stories kept pouring out because initially I only had one topic under the food panic, but I had to add updates, as seemingly to everything else. So all posted up under the post, 40,000 swarm farm to gather free food. So the panic grows. This time in Platteville, Colorado. This from the Washington Post. A farm couple got a huge surprise when they opened their fields to anyone who wanted to pick up free veggies left after the harvest. Farmers already did their harvest. So they said, hey, people come out and pick some free food. 40,000 people showed up. Joe and Chris Miller's field were picked so clean Saturday that a second day of gleaning, the ancient practice of picking up leftover food in farm fields, was canceled for Sunday. Overwhelmed is putting it mildly, Chris Miller said. People obviously need food. She said she expected 5,000 to 10,000 people to show up Saturday to collect free potatoes, carrots, and leeks. Instead, an estimated 11,000 vehicles snaked around cornfields and backed up more than 2 miles. About 30 acres of the 600-acre farm, 37 miles north of Denver, became a parking lot. Denver said they opened the farm to the free public harvest after hearing reports of food being stolen from churches. It was meant as a thank you for customers. But getting to the updates that spill out and dovetail with this story, this from the Los Angeles Times. Hard times and long lines for Southern Californians. Some sought a cart of groceries the week before Thanksgiving. Others sought a way to keep from losing their homes in the new year. By the thousands, a diverse group of Southern Californians converged on two different events last Saturday aimed at helping families in hard economic times. The problems and the aid offered were vastly different, but both reflected the worries and needs of many. In Montebello, California, nearly 5,000 people turned out for a food giveaway, a number that stunned organizers who had tried to keep a low-key event, targeting publicity to several churches and schools. 5,000 turned out. In Van Nuys, California, about 2,000 homeowners attended a workshop promoted as Home Preservation Day. But this was not about how to lay tile or install plumbing. A bank had mailed notices to homeowners in trouble with their mortgages, and Saturday offered them a chance to rework the terms of their loans. Banksters had hoped 100 would turn out and planned for 200. They got 2,000. Loan counselors had time to meet with a fraction of homeowners, and some were turned away. Let's go back to the Washington Post again. Americans' food stamp use nears all-time high. Fueled by rising unemployment and food prices, the number of Americans on food stamps is poised to exceed 30 million for the first time this month, surpassing the historic high set way back in 2005 after Hurricane Katrina. The figures will put the spotlight on hunger when Congress begins deliberations on a new economic stimulus package, said legislators and anti-hunger advocates, predicting that any stimulus bill would include a boost in food stamp benefits. Advocates are also optimistic that President-elect Barack Obama, who made campaign promises to end childhood hunger and whose mother once briefly received food stamps, will make the issue a priority next year. We will soon have the most food stamp recipients in the history of our country, said Jim Weil, president of the Food Research and Action Center, a D.C.-based anti-hunger policy organization. Quote, if the economic forecasts come true, we're likely to see the most hunger that we've seen since the 81 recession and maybe since the 60s when these programs were established. The 81 recession, of course, brought to you by the trilateral administration of Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski. I'm not accepting Reagan and Bush, but come on. And lastly, from the Washington Post to georgewashington.blogspot.com, experts warn of food shortages. The headline of an article on Bloomberg warns food prices will rise, causing export bans and riots. Leading economist Noriel Roubini warns of possible food riots. The Financial Times points out that farmers rely on credit, and credit is drying up. One of the top experts on derivatives, economist Nassim Nicholas Taleb, warns that supermarkets may not be able to borrow against their inventory and will thus be forced to shut down. I hope they're wrong, But when experts like Rubini and Taleb warn of a potential problem, I have to listen, George Washington writes, and we all should listen, as I say to you now. Wrapping up this look at the economy, we're going to do it with a disturbing story. And it's kind of funny, and it's done really well, and it's produced well, and but it's nonetheless disturbing and sad. We're not going to play the entire piece, but you should definitely check it out. It's from Raw Story and ABC News. Brothels see job applications surge in a bad economy. ABC's Neil Karlinski reports that as the economy sours, Nevada brothels are seeing a surge in job applications.
Good evening. It seems that nothing is immune from the current economic crisis, from slumping stocks and plunging sales to more and more Americans losing their jobs. Last month, the nation's rate of unemployment leapt to 6.5%, the highest level in 14 years. And this might just explain why one industry in one particular state is receiving a record level of applications. The work is not to everyone's taste, but in desperate times, some people are prepared to take desperate measures, as Neil Karlinski now reports.
This is Susan.
You look terrified.
It's so nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, aren't you pretty? Thank you.
We're at the Reno airport picking up a woman who just scored a precious high-paying job in the midst of a disastrous economy. And she's flown in from out of town to take it.
Oh, everything you've got, you've got with you.
Yeah,
bless
in
your
my
heart.
One bag.
The boss, Susan Austin, has spared no expense, and her new hire is quickly whisked into a waiting limo.
She's got the one bag, Don.
One bag?
Yes.
The woman's name, as of just this moment at least, is Kimberly, and she's flown into town to take a job as a prostitute at one of the few places in America where it's legal, the self-proclaimed world-famous Mustang Ranch.
Are you nervous? What are you thinking right now? You just climbed off an airplane, you're in a limo, and you're headed out to work as a prostitute for the first time in your
life. I'm nervous. You know, I've got a little shake. I'm more nervous than I think I've ever been in my life.
So. Her explanation is simple. Yeah. Times are tough. So tough, she says she couldn't find any other way to make a living.
I at least filled out 20, 30 applications. No callbacks, no interviews, nothing.
What kinds of jobs?
You know, anywhere from daycares to stores, you know, retail, sales, everything.
So you went from applying to work at a daycare facility or behind the counter at a department store to getting on a plane and taking a job at a brothel?
Yeah.
The Mustang Ranch is more like a small compound tucked away off the highway and surrounded by mountains. As Kimberly heads inside, Madam Susan tells us these are unique times and the world's oldest profession is not immune.
I have more ladies coming in now than I ever did before because of the economic times. And they can make more money doing this than they can looking for Bruce at McDonald's.
Hello, let me introduce you to our new lady.
First stop for Kimberly is the doctor's office.
I'll be doing your exam today. Have you ever worked in a brothel before?
No, I haven't.
Okay, great. What we're going to do today is test your blood. We test you for HIV and syphilis. That's a once-a-month test.
The Mustang Ranch is a multi-million dollar business, and despite the unique product, it's run with sophistication and a keen eye on the profit margin.
Thank you, sweetheart.
A disturbing story from ABC News. Job applications at brothels are seeing quite the surge in this quite the bad economy. And that's a bizarre little bitter taste to leave in your mouth on the econo crash, because we're going to wildly shift gears now and just hit a touch of new 9/11 news. We covered recently the website Pentabomb, spelled strangely P-E-N-T-T-B-O-M. And it's the guy who's gotten tons of videos from the FBI thanks to relentless Freedom of Information requests, and he's been posting them over at pentabomb.com. Won't play a clip. It's only a 13-second, I think, video posted up. But it's new video of the quote-unquote third plane over New York City on 9/11. A new video of the third plane, which was mysteriously seen lingering over New York City before and after the crash of Flight 175 into the South Tower. So linked up, there's an article about this plane, if it is the same plane the article is mentioning. It's a PDF from the Journal of 9/11Studies.com. Plane has a dark tail fin similar to the plane seen in the video, which was recorded again before the impact of Flight 175. So if it is the same plane, then it was lingering in the airspace for at least 5 minutes. There's also a Journal of 9/11 Studies follow-up article, again another PDF for you, and you can go to their linked article, which, of course, as it should, caution against drawing conclusions based upon this limited viewing perspective. However, interestingly enough, let's hit the flashback link and jump back to September 13th, 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com and from Raw Story. And I played the report for you. Mystery 9/11 aircraft was a military doomsday plane. That was, of course, the CNN report, Jamie McIntyre, the doomsday plane, the shadow government plane. Was it zooming around over New York and Washington? I believe the flashback story takes place in D.C., so the doomsday plane flying around Pentagon and White House. However, this new video, third plane, was over New York City. Take it for what it is. It's more footage, and it's more info. So we can just take it and add it to the file, and we'll see what happens. That's the only bit of 9/11 news I have for you right now. And we'll shift gears wildly yet again to my somewhat tasteless headline. Three strange deaths plus one should have been. We'll get to the should have been last. The three strange deaths first. And I mentioned this last week. I saw it in the breaking news when I was doing the show with Clyde. Teen streams suicide live on the web. This from Threat Level. A 19-year-old Florida teen's suicide broadcast last Wednesday on Justin.tv was a result of an overdose of opiates and benzodiazepine, the Broward County Medical Examiner and Trauma Services Division said last Friday. The Pembroke Pines teen was pronounced dead at about 6 p.m. on Wednesday, coroner spokeswoman Sherry Baker said in a telephone interview. She said benzodiazepine is used for depression and insomnia. About 185 people were viewing the feed on the San Francisco-based live streaming service. The teen had announced his pending suicide on a bodybuilding.com chat forum, which linked to the broadcast. He left an online suicide note, and viewers were seen egging him on. The chat's moderator called the authorities, Baker said, and police broke into the residence. Justin.tv CEO Michael Siebel, or rather Siebel, S-E-I-B-E-L, said in an email, quote, "We regret that this has occurred and respect the privacy of the broadcaster and his family during this time. We have policies in place to discourage the distribution of distressing content, and our community monitors the site accordingly. This content was flagged by our community, reviewed, and removed according to our terms of service." A disturbing note here in the 21st century New World Order. However, the second strange death. Argentine man kills himself on TV. Another broadcast death. Broadcast suicide. Reminding us, of course, of Hey Man, Nice Shot, Bud Dwyer. But this from the BBC. A former police chief in Argentina, wanted for alleged war crimes against human rights, shot himself dead in front of television cameras. Mario Ferreira, I mangled that a little bit for you, F-E-R-R-E-Y-R-A. He was giving an interview on top of a water tank at his home in the northern province of Tucumán in Argentina. Police were coming to arrest him when he killed himself. Mr. Ferreira was wearing his customary black shirt and cowboy hat and told the interviewer that he was innocent and had not committed any crimes. He then told his wife Maria that he would love her forever, pulled a pistol from his boot, and shot himself behind the ear. I had not heard of the Dirty War, but in looking into what sort of human rights violations and war crimes Mario Ferreira was involved in. A link over to Wikipedia for you, so let's learn a tiny bit about the Dirty War. It refers to the state-sponsored violence. State-sponsored, my friends. The Dirty War, or in Spanish, Guerra Sucia, S-U-C-I-A, refers to the state-sponsored violence against Argentine citizenry from roughly 1976 to 1983, carried out primarily by Jorge Rafael Videla's military government. The exact chronology of the repression is still debated, as trade unionists were targeted for assassination as early as 1973. Isabel Martinez de Perón's annihilation decrees of 1975 during Operativo Independencia, Operation Independence, have also been suggested as the origin of the Dirty War. And it goes further into the People's Revolutionary Army and Juan Perón, and more on the Dirty War in Argentina. State-sponsored violence. The third strange death, with an interesting update that we'll get to in a moment. Guard fatally shoots man with swords at the Scientology Celebrity Center in California.
A shooting at the Scientology Center in Hollywood tonight. A sword-wielding man is dead, gunned down by a security guard. Hello, I'm Micah Ullman.
I'm Giovanna Lotta. Here's the latest at 6. Police say that man entered the grounds of the facility this afternoon and refused to leave. That's when a guard opened fire. Eyewitnesses reporter Leanne Suter is live in Hollywood with more on the incident. Leanne.
Giovanna, an afternoon of violence here at Scientology's famous Celebrity Center. Samurai swords and gunfire as a suspect attempts to attack security guards. Investigators search the suspect's car for possible evidence and potential clues as to why the sword-wielding suspect attacked security guards at the Church of Scientology Celebrity Center.
They've asked him to leave. He threatened the officers and their safety, and one of the security officers, in defense of his life, shot the individual.
At least three security guards were involved in the altercation, but only one fired his weapon. The violence unfolded around 1:30 at the Scientology facility in Hollywood. The suspect pulled on to the church grounds, got out of his car armed with two samurai swords, and attempted to attack the guards. That's when one guard opened fire.
We were in our apartment, just heard a gunshot. I finished the gunshot, and that's it. And we were like, okay. He wasn't convinced that it was, but I knew it was definitely a gunshot.
Hit once, the suspect was taken to the hospital where he later died. At this point, police say they have no idea what the motive may have been for the bizarre attack. The entire scene was captured on camera by the church's surveillance system.
The evidence itself is very, very clear that the security officers were defending their safety.
Yes, so detectives know what happened. It is the why they are still trying to figure out. That answer may come once that suspect is officially identified. Live in Hollywood, Leon Suter, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
And we have now identified him. But let's get the initial report from Wikinews. Guard fatally shoots man with swords at Scientology building. An unidentified, but we'll get to that, man carrying two swords was shot and killed outside the Church of Scientology Celebrity Center in Hollywood, California. There are many links in there for you. The AP, the Los Angeles Times, KABC, and Raw Story, and more. However, the update that I saw in print in the Oregonian, and I didn't realize at the time, they do say it, I believe they just said it in the clip. We can rewind and find out. The man shot by Scientology guard was from Oregon. This from the Associated Press. An Oregon man who was fatally shot as he wielded a pair of samurai swords and attempted to attack guests at a landmark Scientology building was a former follower of the religion who had made at least a dozen previous threats against the church, a Scientology official said Monday. The man's name, another Mario. This time, Mario Majorski, M-A-J-O-R-S-K-I, 48 years old, from Florence, Oregon, was shot once by a security guard as he tried to use the swords to attack guests Sunday at the Scientology Celebrity Center in Hollywood, police said. Another unsatisfied customer of Scientology. That's three strange deaths, all basically happened within a 24-48 hour period. posted up together for you. However, the one shameful note, three strange deaths plus one should have been. I don't take glee in the misfortune of others. However, it's hard to maybe feel sad when you see that, oh, Cheney's rushed to the hospital. I don't hold my breath that he's going to be okay. I don't think that God will have another angel in heaven when Cheney kicks it. However, Attorney General Michael Mukasey collapsed in the middle of a speech in Washington.
Attorney General Michael Mukasey collapsed during a speech Thursday night and lost consciousness, according to a Justice Department official. Mukasey was delivering a speech to the Federalist Society at a Washington hotel when witnesses say he just started shaking, then collapsed.
When he was helped down to the stage, he was laid down. They asked everyone just to stay in their seats to avoid commotion. And then when he was taken from the scene,
the Attorney General was about 15 to 20 minutes into his speech about the Bush administration's successes in combating terrorism when he reportedly began slurring his words.
He started kind of stuttering and repeating himself a couple of times lurched forward and hit the rostrum, and before he could fall to the ground, someone came to his aid.
67-year-old was rushed to George Washington University Hospital.
The Attorney General is conscious, conversant, and alert. His vital statistics are strong, and he's in good spirits. The doctors will keep him overnight for observations. We will continue to update you when we have additional information.
Mike Rossia, The Associated Press.
Attorney General Michael Mukasey was back in top form the morning after he collapsed during a speech.
I'm out, sir.
Wait. Mukasey started slurring his words as he spoke to a conservative legal group, then pitched over before being rushed to a nearby hospital and given a battery of tests. But aides now say this was likely just a fainting spell.
Everything looks great. The Attorney General had a CT scan. It was normal. He had a clear MRI. They ruled out TIA, which is transient ischemic attack, which can be associated with stroke. He had a stress test. It was completely normal. The doctor said he's in good shape and basically that he beat the machine. He also had a stress echocardiogram, which was also completely normal. He's been basically given a clean bill of health.
Mukasey got a call from the boss just before President Bush headed off on a trip to Peru, but is now back on the job and is said to be keen to finish out his term. The 67-year-old former New York judge was tapped by the president 14 months ago to take over a Justice Department reeling under then-Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, who was plagued by charges of political cronyism in hiring and firing career lawyers. Mukasey's credited with helping rebuild the department's morale, but was also embroiled in the thorny legal issues stemming from the war on terror, including how suspects are questioned, housed, and tried.
Indeed, the subject Mukasey was speaking on when he collapsed was the continuing threat from terrorism, something that consumed much of his brief tenure, but something that likely will be a top concern of the next Attorney General. Mark Smith, The Associated Press, Washington.
So that happened last Thursday, November 20th. However, there is one interesting update. This from November 25th from the Seattle Times. State Justice confirmed he yelled tyrant at Mukasey before he collapsed. This from Ken Armstrong, Seattle Times staff reporter Richard Sanders. A justice on the Washington State Supreme Court has never been one to shy away from controversy or blunt language. And last week, as he sat at a Federalist Society dinner and listened to Attorney General Michael Mukasey, Sanders reached his tipping point. After listening to Mukasey defend the Bush administration's counterterrorism policies, you know, its detainment practices at Gitmo and the interpretation of the Geneva Convention's reach, Sanders stood and shouted, "Tyrant! You are a tyrant!" Frankly, everybody in the room was applauding or sometimes laughing, and I thought, I gotta stand up and say something, and I did, Sanders told the Seattle Times Tuesday. I stood up and said tyrant, and then I sat down again, and I left. It wasn't until the next morning, when he turned on the TV in his hotel room, that Sanders learned what happened after he departed. Mukasey, later in his speech, began slurring his words, slumped at the podium, and passed out. He was taken to the hospital, where he was released the next day after getting a clean bill of health. I couldn't believe it, Sanders said of the news that Mukasey had fainted. Mukasey's collapse occurred well after Sanders shouted him, and the two events appear unrelated. But it would be far more interesting if they were related, and if that we could just shout tyrants at the tyrants, they would fall over and collapse. That'd be excellent news. Last Saturday, November 22nd, which of course was the 45th anniversary of the Black Op assassination of John F. Kennedy, there were nationwide protests against the Federal Reserve. We didn't get a whole lot of coverage in the States. We did get some international coverage, which we'll get to in just a moment. However, from FirstCoastNews.com out of Jacksonville, Florida, this initial article is about protesters in downtown Jacksonville. A massive crowd gathered around the Jacksonville landing Saturday as part of a national rally to end the Federal Reserve. There's a Federal Reserve office near the landing at 800 West Water Street. JSO officers are filtered throughout the area to make sure it remains a peaceful protest. The national protest was organized by bloggers. Their ultimate goal is to end the existence of the Federal Reserve system. They believe the Fed is to blame for the current economic crisis. Protesters say if the Federal Reserve continues at the current rate of spending and credit regulation, it will be the fall of America. Protesters blame the Federal Reserve for the Great Depression and say America will face even harder economic times if the Fed remains in place. The protest happened in 39 cities across the country. According to the lead website, endthefed.us, the End the Fed organization has some notable supporters, including former Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul and Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. So there are some of the other sort of regional stories. However, like I said, this didn't seem to get much national coverage. Another one out of San Antonio, protesters staked their case in front of the Federal Reserve, chanting "End the Fed" and waving placards reading "Bail out American people" and "Income tax is not constitutional." About 80 people from around Central Texas staged a loud but orderly protest Saturday in downtown San Antonio. This is part of a national rally going on in 38 states. It's about international bankers controlling our currency. That was said by Matthew Medina, 23 years old, an electrician from San Antonio. Another one from Wave3.com. This time out of Louisville, Kentucky. So we had Jacksonville, Florida, San Antonio, Texas, and now Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville rally protests government bailouts. Concerned citizens in Louisville took their frustration about the economy to the streets Saturday afternoon. At 5th and Jefferson, more than 100 people showed up to protest government efforts to bail out private companies. The protest was part of a Campaign for Liberty effort. Those involved say they want to end the Federal Reserve because it has become corrupt. They want to see more fiscal responsibility in Washington. We want politicians to know that when they go up to represent the people, they need to understand that they've taken a constitutional oath to obey and defend the Constitution, and voting for bailouts like this is against their oath, and literally they are traitors to the country, said Charles Zeller, a concerned citizen taking part in the protest. The Louisville protest was a regional segment of a national event. Rallies, again, were also scheduled to take place in 58 other cities Saturday, including Lexington and Cincinnati. Now, as I said, those are the regional reports. We didn't really seem to get much national coverage of the End the Fed protest. However, with scant national coverage, if we look international, we had another interesting and balanced report from Russia Today. RussiaToday.com, one of my favorite subscriptions on my YouTube channel, always seem to do good work. They'll cover Ron Paul, they'll cover 9/11 Truth, and here they are covering the End the Fed protest.
It's National End the Fed Day, and these people say that they are sick and tired of being robbed.
It's a criminal enterprise. Anybody who charges usury, money laundering, and counterfeiting of money, I mean, that's what the mafia does.
What makes me mad about the Fed is the fact that they're so secretive about how monetary policy is. They just keep on printing more and more money, and everyone knows you can't run a printing press and create wealth.
Some Americans are calling for a sound monetary policy and an end to and bailouts.
Though not many people showed up here in Washington, D.C., a growing movement of citizens concerned with this country's fiscal policy will gather in 39 cities nationwide at each Federal Reserve building.
Some claim that the Federal Reserve system is at the very heart of the current economic crisis, which these days might be beating out of control. Debbie Krueger is a former Marine and mother of five. She helped organize this protest.
Federal Reserve is monopolizing our money system, and I know people that are working three jobs and still can't make ends meet. It's just sad and disgusting that we don't have the same quality of life that we used to have. The way they're using the money is a disgrace. You know, all the foreign wars that they're fighting for no reason and based on lies, and, you know, the Federal Reserve itself is based on lies.
Another Marine, young Adam Kokesh, served in Iraq and has been a vocal critic of the war since leaving the U.S. Marines.
I think that the Federal Reserve is the driving force behind corporatism in America and the military-industrial complex, which of course is driving our imperialist foreign policy, and often they have no regard for human life or morality or decency.
Dina Gosofsky, RT, Washington, D.C.
That second part, of course, was Portland, Oregon's own Alex Ansary in downtown Portland, Oregon, bullhorning against the Federal Reserve policy. But if we return to the accompanying article to the Russia Today piece that we just heard a little bit, and again, both those clips available in their entirety up on MediaMonarchy.com from Russia Today. While leaders in Peru grapple with the financial fallout, Americans angry at the multi-billion dollar bailout plans are protesting in Washington. They say the U.S. Federal Reserve, far from helping solve the financial crisis, is taking money out of their pockets. November 22nd was National End the Fed Day, and a number of U.S. citizens concerned with the country's fiscal policy have gathered in 39 cities nationwide at each Federal Reserve building, saying they're sick and tired of being robbed. And again, the video, Alex Ansary bullhorns the Federal Reserve in Portland. So from Jacksonville to Washington to San Antonio to Louisville to Portland, Oregon. Let's wrap up this look at the banksters with an amazing new piece from Webster Tarpley. This is posted up in many places, but I got it from, again, Greg Nixon, Daily Dose of Terror. Webster Tarpley's End Wall Street Bankster Rule. End the Derivatives Depression. The November 22nd in the Fed rallies raise a vital issue. It's past time to abolish the unconstitutional, illegal, and failed institution known as the Federal Reserve System, the privately owned central bank, which has been looting and wrecking the U.S. economy for almost 100 years. That was the interesting thing to note. Now I forget which article it was. The one that said, we think that the Federal Reserve has become corrupt. No, we pretty much know that it was set up to be corrupt. That's why the banksters put on disguises and snuck away to Jekyll Island to plot out how they would unfold this Federal Reserve, even down to coming up with a clever name, tricking you into thinking that it's actually federal, when it's, of course, as federal as Federal Express. But back to Webster Tarpley's End Wall Street Bankster Rule. We must end a system where unelected, unaccountable cliques of bankers and financiers loyal to names like Morgan, Rockefeller, and Mellon set interest rates and money supply behind closed doors, leading to deindustrialization, mass impoverishment, and a world economic and financial depression of incalculable severity. The Fed helped cause the crash of 1929, did nothing to stop the banking panic of 1932 and 33, and is the main cause of the 1.5 quadrillion derivatives crisis, which is devastating the world. The Federal Reserve System is Wall Street's murder weapon against the U.S., and the Fed must be stopped. The purpose of abolishing the Fed is to get re-industrialization, economic modernization, full employment, and rising standards of living for all people. Contrary to the monetarist fetishes, the value and soundness of currency in the modern world are determined by the ability of a national economy to produce physical commodities that the rest of the world wants to buy. The decline of the dollar has its roots in the wanton destruction of the U.S. industrial base initiated by the trilateral administration of Jimmy Carter and Fed's boss Paul Adolf Volcker with his 22% prime rate. Over the past 40 years, the U.S. standard of living has declined by two-thirds, and the country has become a post-industrial rubble field, a moonscape monument to the folly of a post-industrial service economy. If you want to go back to sound money, you must gear up modern industrial production so that the world will need dollars to buy goods manufactured in this country. No amount of gold will do the trick. And that's, I think, the important thing that Tarpley is pointing out, as opposed to the idea that we do kind of rah-rah-rah behind buying a bunch of gold and gold standard and the sort of Ron Paul mindset. This is the other take. But it's important any notes. We have to make shit that other people want. We used to make TVs and cars. People want that stuff. They used to buy it. But we've been deindustrialized. Who did we mention there? Paul Adolf Volcker. Have you heard his name recently? Oh, we have. Let's jump to the Chicago Sun-Times, shall we? As we wrap this up on the Econo crash. And just take a note from this article from Webster Tarpley. We jump to the Chicago Sun-Times. Volcker is the right man for the job. The stock market likes Obama's picks for his economic team, and you should too. The Dow Jones Industrial Average posted a four-day strong of gains, closing up 247 points Thursday in pre-holiday trading. It was the biggest four-day percentage since 1932. There's that year again. Though the market has more than personalities to consider these days, the gains can certainly be considered a sign that investors are thinking far more positively than they were in the two-day rout that greeted Obama's election. So, Paul Volcker makes his return again, with his man, Zbigniew Brzezinski, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs, the international gangsters, back again. The most confidence-inspiring move came as former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker was named Wednesday to chair a new independent panel advising the president on the financial markets and the economy. History repeats itself. That article, End Wall Street Bankster Rule, from Webster Tarpley, is a long and informative one, and you should check it out, as you should also check out his great two new books, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography, and of course, The Postmodern Coup. We'll get more and more and more into that as it all comes spilling out, and as we see the Black Friday events of the zombie stampede at the New York Walmart, or God knows what's happening right now that we haven't read about yet. We'll cover the Econo crash and the coming criminal cabinet of the same guys who have done these things over and over again. Again, we mentioned on the B-side last night, we're going to keep Gates on. His expertise is in keeping fights going in Afghanistan. He's been doing it a long time. And of course, his man, Zbigniew Brzezinski, wrote a glowing profile of Robert Gates in one of Time's list of most influential people. So we got Gates, we got Brzezinski, we got Volcker coming back. And I think we're going to be in trouble. But let's turn now to the creepy list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. I track the visitors, make a little log of the most interesting ones, and post it up for you so you can see what they're looking at. And again, I don't think it's them. I don't think they're watching me. But damn, these are funny and really interesting. When you have Bayer out of Germany Googling pesticide explosion Belgrade, they still landed on the story about the pesticide explosion at a Bayer chemical factory in my home state of West Virginia. Bayer, again, part of the Reich tentacles that we never quite got away from. We defeated the Germans in World War II, but we did not defeat the Nazis. We paperclipped them. North Dakota State University Computer Center out of Grand Forks, North Dakota. We're checking out episode 100 of MediaMonarchy.com. The Department of Homeland Security Googled John F. Kennedy assassination anniversary. J.C. Penney out of Dallas, Texas Googled Slate interview Robert Bayer. Of course, Robert Bayer, noted ex-CIA man, says bin Laden's dead, and he knows the guy who cashed out on September 10th and said shit's going down tomorrow. And we cover Robert Bayer many, many times here on Media Monarchy. University of Pittsburgh Medical Center hit me up from blacklistednews.com. Northwestern Mutual out of Milwaukee Googled Iceland riots video. West Virginia University out of Morgantown, West Virginia Googled pictures of Jim Jones, cult leader. The U.S. Geological Survey out of Washington, D.C. Googled Iceland Parliament meeting plus video. The Roseland Community Hospital out of Chicago Googled Black Secret Service agent Alex Bolden. It's actually Abraham Bolden, but they still got it right. That's, of course, the first Black Secret Service agent. He was handpicked by John F. Kennedy, and he alerted the FBI office in Chicago about threats to JFK in the weeks before his assassination. Of course, the Drug Enforcement Administration visited. We also had National WiMAX IMS environment out of Pakistan. That may just be their wireless. It may just be a generic Comcast-y kind of name. However, it came from Pakistan, and they Googled Mumbai attack analysis inside story plus Pakistan propaganda. And we covered that for you today. Finally, the Tokyo Polytechnic University out of Tokyo, Japan. We're reading about the Gentleman's Club for the Rich and Famous, which is, of course, the Bohemian Grove. That's going to do it, my friends, for episode 101 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. And thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Thanks for spreading the word. Thanks to the 165 and counting of you who downloaded episode 100. That's amazing. I thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed the episode. Hopefully we'll have Clyde Lewis back soon. Hopefully I can try and go on Ground Zero, or at least make an appearance and shout something from the audience. But we'll see. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, my friends, you got to get active or we're going to get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.